Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, I guess we're on the second paragraph of the last Anuchid. The statement we just read is that, let me read the verse from the previous paragraph, the translation. This is, my Krishna, excuse me. Let me see the source of that verse. From the ninth canto, eighth chapter. And the first verse said, "My Lord, even Lord Brahma is to this day unable to understand your position, which is far beyond himself. He can't understand it either by meditation or by mental speculation. So what to speak of others like us, who have been created by Brahma in various forms, as demigods, animals, human beings, birds, and beasts. We are completely in ignorance. Therefore, how can we know you, who are the transcendents?" Okay, and then there's some discussion of that. Even Brahma can't understand the Supreme as a person. What to speak of those who were born after Brahma, the other creatures? Apare tarhi kim na pashyanti tatraha. But then, why can't others see? Why can't others see? That's a question. And it's answered by the next verse. Ye deha. Wait, who's others here? We had Brahma and then all the creatures born after him. And who's left after that? Oh, those other creatures. We discussed how come Brahma can't see. What about the other ones? Why can't they see? Why can't they see that the Supreme is a person? So that's explained in this verse. Ye deha bhajas tviguna pradana gunan vipashyant utavatamascha yanmayaya mohita chetasas tvam viduk swasam stung nabahik prakasha. This is answered. Those who have accepted material bodies come under the control of the three modes of nature. They see only those modes, or sometimes only darkness. Because they are bewildered by illusion, the illumination of their consciousness extends only outward. They cannot know you, even though you are present within them. So the answer is, living entities in general are deluded by Maya, and therefore their perception is just of external things. Okay. Explanation by Jiva Goswami. Ye deha bhajas te swasmin samyakstitam apitvam naviduhu. Those who possess bodies, that means material bodies, do not know you, although within them you are situated in your complete form. Samyak stitam is samstitam is the word, right? Yeah, but swasamstam rather. Swasamstam, samstam. And that's glossed as samyak stitam. You're situated in your complete form. I took samyak to mean complete. You're situated completely. It means you show your whole personal form. After that, kintu gunan eva vipashyanti kadachit chakevalam tama eva vipashyanti. Rather, they don't see you in your complete form, even though you're there. Rather, they only see the material modes, and sometimes they only see darkness. Yatas triguna buddhir eva pradanam yesham buddhi paratantrataya jagrat swapnayor vishayan pashyanti. Because intelligence in the three modes is prominent, Triguna is the word in the verse, but that's glossed with the word buddhi, intelligence of the three modes, is prominent in them, in these conditioned souls. They become subordinate to that intelligence. The intelligence takes over, and they're controlled by their intelligence. And they see material objects in their waking consciousness and dreams. While in deep sleep, they see only darkness. So that's when they see darkness, when they're in deep sleep. Other times, they're seeing products of the various modes. Sushupta tu tama eva, natu vastuto niyugunanam, sarvesham atmanam atmabhutam tvam. They do not see you, who are factually the self of all these transcendental selves. It's the selves, the atmas, who are doing this material perceiving. And the Supreme Soul is the self of those selves. They don't see him. Sarvatra hetuhu. This is all so because of the following reason. The reason for all of this is yad yato mayaya yasyatava mayaya va mohitam cheto yesham te maya vimohita cheta. This is all so because their minds are bewildered by the maya, or Dimaya sounds funny. By Maya. Or reading the word yad differently, their minds are bewildered by you, by whose, your Maya. See, it can be Taya Maya, by that Maya, or the Tat Maya Ya could mean Tava Maya Ya. By that Maya or by your Maya. You can read it either way. Commentary. Consciousness is an inalienable quality of living beings. That means you can't take it away from them. In sleep, living beings are cut off from external consciousness, yet still they see dreams. In deep sleep, no dreams are experienced, but there is an awareness of the absence of all objects, internal and external, so consciousness is still there. Even death is not the end of consciousness, but only an extended period of deep sleep for the time it takes to be transported to the womb of another mother and there begin developing one's next body. All these states of covered consciousness result from submitting to the control of the Supreme Lord's external energy. A condition finite souls can avoid only by taking shelter instead of his spiritual energy. As the next verse describes, surrender devotees of the Lord, and they only can accomplish this. So we get another verse of this passage in the next paragraph. Any comments? Yes, Tota Govinda.
Is he the self of the selves because everything comes from him, or there is another explanation?
Well, there could be explained in different ways. Ramanujacharya defines soul as that which controls a body and knows it and identifies as the possessor of that body. That's the soul of a body. So, because God knows everything in existence, all kinds of spiritual, material, and marginal energy, he knows all of it, he controls all of it, and he identifies with it as his. Therefore, he's the soul of everything. By definition, a technical definition of what a soul is. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, we hear about the five koshas, and there's first a body, and then a soul of that body. The prana is like the soul of the physical body. The mind is like the soul of the prana. And the living entity is like the prana of the mind, and the supreme soul is the soul of the living entity. That's explained in the second part of the Taittiriya Upanishad. Anything else?
Can you please clarify, Prabhuji, this statement? Jagat Svapnayor Vishayam Pashyanti Sushuptau Tutama Eva So what does it mean? Sushupta, I can understand this is very deep sleep, like during the night they see only darkness.
Yeah, well, yes.
What is Jagrata and the Svapna?
Oh, these are three states of consciousness. Waking consciousness is called Jagrata, or Jagrat. Jagrat is a present participle, that's all. It means being awake. And Svapna is sleep. Awakeful consciousness, sleep consciousness, and deep sleep consciousness.
So what is the difference between sleep and deep sleep?
Okay, this comes from the Upanishad. Some Aitiraya Upanishad talks about three states. The fourth stage of consciousness is Turiya, transcendental awareness. Difference. You experience dreams in Swapna. In Sushupti, you don't experience anything. And this is, a physiological fact. At night you go into a state of deep sleep where the mind is, the conscious mind is totally inactive.
This fourth state of consciousness, Turiya, is it completely transcendental? Or there
it's
is
supposed to be, Turiya.
Or there is something higher than Turiya?
No, that's spiritual consciousness, the fourth. There are three states of material consciousness, and the fourth is spiritual consciousness.
Prabhu, when the soul is traveling from one room to another, like that, what state it is in? Jagrati, Sushupti, or Swapna?
Well, it's pretty much Sushupti. The soul is in a state of Sushupti even after it enters the womb for some time. When the soul body is just developing, if it's a human body for about 5 months, it's in complete Sushupti. It only starts to even start dreaming after that, as far as I know. So, even after you enter the new womb, you're in Sushupti. So, when you're just floating around, just being carried by your pranas to the next body, I don't think there's any active consciousness. Better if it wasn't, because it'd be pretty painful and frightening. Yes.
Then ghosts are in which consciousness? Ghosts.
Ghosts can be fully conscious, but he has a subtle body, but not a gross body. A ghost can be aware. He can see that there's food on the table, but he doesn't have hands and a mouth to eat it. So he can be in wakeful consciousness, a ghost.
Then what is the difference between those souls which are being transferred from one womb to other womb? They are also having subtle body with the soul, and ghosts who also have subtle body with the soul.
Well, because when you leave a gross body, you're deprived of it, and you're just in your subtle body. It's like you give your clothes in to be washed, and you're just in your kopins. So the living entity is just in his kopins, in his subtle body, because his gross body has been taken away from him. So the difference between a ghost and an ordinary person is that an ordinary person is immediately transferred to a new body, and the ghost doesn't get a new body. That's his punishment. That's the difference. He doesn't get a gross body. He's left in his copies.
Then, if this state is almost similar, like ghost and those who are being transferred to...
But it's not really similar, because a ghost is stuck. Ordinary people don't get stuck like that. They're immediately given a new body.
Is being in coma similar to being in Sushupti?
So coma is an extended state of Sushupti. It's on the verge of death. It's called coma because coma means the end. It's this extended state of Sushupti that may be on the verge of death. The person may be dying. Some people stay in a coma for decades. That's abnormal. Normally, we're only in Sushupti for a couple of hours each night. Although, a person who seems to be in a coma may be dreaming. He may even be awake. He may not, you know, senses may not be working, but some, his hearing might be working. His mind may be working well in a coma. People remember this when they come out of comas. They may be almost fully conscious, but most of their senses aren't working. But if the sense of hearing is working, then they're hearing what other people are doing. They're aware of it. So I wouldn't call that even sleeping. That's actually being awake, just your other senses are not functioning. So in the coma, you might be awake. In a so-called coma, I guess it's not properly called a coma, but nobody can see what you're thinking. So it looks like you're in sushupti, but you may not be. Okay, we got a problem with the noise. So what was it?
The
Brahmavadis. No, if somebody actually attains Brahman realization, he becomes, realizes Brahman, that that's supposed to be Turiya consciousness, that's transcendental consciousness. It may be impersonal, but if it's real, if it's not fake, if it's real Brahman realization, then it's spiritual. Sushupti is a material phase of consciousness. It may look similar. There's a kind of bliss in sushupti, but that's a tamasic bliss. It's not spiritual bliss. It's a shadow of the real bliss of the self. When you're not experiencing anything else, you may experience a taste of the Brahmananda. Because it's just natural to the living entity. He's got some in him. And when you're not dreaming and you're not thinking about anything and all your senses are inactive, and even your ego is not acting, you may experience some ecstasy. But that's just a shadow reflection of the real Brahmananda. But there's a similarity there. There's some experience of ecstasy in deep sleep. But still you're covered over by ignorance in that condition. Yes. That's why a living entity needs deep sleep. He needs to experience a little taste of ecstasy to recover for the next day, even though it's a very dim reflection.
Is there any differentiation between realization of Turiya consciousness of an impersonalist and personalist?
There's a big difference, but the Upanishad is just talking generically. It's not dividing fourth, fifth, sixth different divisions of spiritual consciousness. But we know there's definite divisions. Impersonal consciousness is definitely different and inferior to Krishna consciousness.
I remember Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he was speaking something like a fifth state of consciousness, like Turiya Gopal. Turiya Gopal.
Turiya Gopal.
Yeah, but I don't know.
What is that? I have a problem here. My energy didn't last. I'm about to shut off. Do you have an adapter? But what was that about Turiya Gopal?
He was saying that this is a realization of those who have in relationship with Krishna.
Turiya Gopal,
yeah. I don't
have any. I haven't heard of that, but okay. I mean, the Turiya consciousness, fourth state of consciousness, is spiritual consciousness in general. That includes Krishna consciousness on the higher kind of spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. I'm just not familiar with that terminology. Okay. We can try the next paragraph. Before I forget, can you try to find Stephen Hollick? And there's one edition, it's a small green book, or a white cover, green white cover, small hardcover book, and stuff. I'm going to read it. That's one I want. Yes. I'm not sure. Anyway, there's a couple of Stavamalas, so you can find whatever's there. 101.3. Tatapi tvam vicharena gyasyasiti chainmaivam. Nonetheless, by using your discrimination, you will be able to know me. Now, I don't know who's talking to whom here. It's the Supreme Lord talking to somebody, but we haven't found out yet. Well, not so. Maivam. It's not that I can just realize you by using my discrimination, O Lord. Yato nasmad vidanam nam gyana gocharastvam kintu bhaktanam evetyaha. Not so, this is answered. Because you are not accessible to the knowledge of persons like me. Only your devotees can know you. Etyaha, this is Brahma talking. This Brahma states, Tam tvam aham jnana ganam svabhava pradvasta maya gunabheda mohai sanandana dhyayar munivir vibhavyam katam vimudhak paribhavayami. This Brahma states, O my Lord, sages freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature, sages such as the four Kumaras, Sanat, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana, are able to think of you who are concentrated consciousness. Prabhupada had a different word there, but I put consciousness to fit the explanation. You who are concentrated consciousness. But how can an ignorant person like me think of you? So sages can think of you. But how about ignorant people like me? We can't. Jiva Goswami explains. Tam nanascharya vitikapara shakti nidanam tvam patam paribhavayami. How can I conceive of that person, you, the reservoir of your supreme energies, with their various amazing functions? How can I conceive of you? Then the Lord asks, Kim Sarupam? I am who are like what? Answer, Ganaganam. Satya Gananantananda Aika Rasamurtim. You are Ganagana, concentrated consciousness, meaning the homogeneous embodiment of real existence, consciousness, and unlimited bliss. Homogeneous, that means nothing material mixed in. It's all pure Satchidananda. It doesn't mean he's all vanilla, all one, but it means it, no, nothing material there. Ata eva anirdesha vapuhu iti sahasranama stotri. Therefore, thus he is described in the Sahasranama Stotra in the Mahabharata as anirdesha vapuhu, he whose body cannot be described in words. We need a reference for that in the Vishnu Sahasranama, verse number. Ayam bhavaha gyanaganatvat Natavat Gana Vishayas Tvam. The idea behind this is, even though you are the concentrated essence of consciousness, you are still not known as the object of knowledge. An object of knowledge. And even though, okay, let me go back. Vichara vishayatve pi maya gunayar abhibhutoham na vichare samarta. So, you're the concentrated essence of consciousness, but knowledge cannot know you, ordinary knowledge. And even if it could, I'm not capable of knowing you through such knowledge. I'm not capable. Even if somebody could know you, I can't. Even though you're an object of discriminating study, I, who am overcome by the modes of Maya, am not able to properly discriminate. So, ordinary knowledge can't know the Lord. Discrimination, it's not this, it's not that, and distinguish supreme from all the material things, and he's what's left over, neti neti. That's a process of discrimination. But I, unfortunately, Brahma says, I don't have that power of discrimination. Nanu tarhi mama tata vidatve kim pramanam. Then, what is the evidence that I am like this? If even you, Brahma, can't understand me and can't figure me out, then what evidence is there that I'm the way you say I am? This is answered. Tatraha. Swena tadiyena bhavena bhaktiya swasyatmano bhavena avyabhavena ivava padvasta maya guna prakara krita moho yebhyais tai sanandarajaya bhagavat tatvavidbir munibir vibhavyam vicharyam sakshad anubhavaniyam chepyar taha. The evidence is as follows. The sages headed by Sanandana are conversant with the truth about the personality of Godhead, and their bewilderment created by the varieties of Maya, modes of Maya, has been eradicated by Swa-bhava, meaning either devotion focused on him or else revelation of their own self. So there are people. Okay, I, Brahma, can't understand you, but there are people. Then the Lord says, well, how can you say I'm like this? And Brahma says, because there are people who do understand you, like the four Kumaras. And they were bewildered maybe before, but they've become free from that bewilderment by swabhava. So bhava can mean just one's own nature, but here it's being glossed in two different ways, as if it was a compound, swa-bhava. It means either devotion focused on him. He's swa and bhava is devotion to him. Or else, swabhava means revelation of their own self. They can conceive or study you and realize you directly. Commentary, King Amshuman here prays to Lord Kapila. That's what this verse is. Amshuman praying to Kapila, these three verses. 9th canto, 8th chapter. He prays in the humble mood of a Vaishnava, denying his own ability to realize the truth about his Creator. But be that as it may, even those who are not yet fit to see the Supreme Lord can be confident of the possibility of that vision. They can be confident, even though they can't yet see, that he can be seen. Because they know that some great souls have had that realization, and are moreover willing to share it. Serving the Supreme Lord's pure devotees and obtaining their blessings is the surest means for success in this endeavor. Now, where was it? Where did I bring Brahma into this? In the translation, I said that Brahma's talking. In the commentary? No, this Brahma states.
What's in the translation?
No, the translation, second, I said Brahma states. I'll just say this is answered. This is stated. I just won't say who states it. So that when in the end we're told Amshuman is speaking, then that'll be news to us. We won't know that. Okay. Last paragraph. Tasmad ulukai prakasha. Oh, anyway, I'm sorry. Before that, any comments? Dr. Gopinath.
We normally hear that, like they always say in the Bhagavatam, the four Kumaras led by Sanatan. But in this case, we hear that the four Kumaras led by Sanandana. Is it a mistake or?
I think, it's not Sanandana, it's Sanat Kumaras comes first on this list.
Oh, in this one?
Yeah, and also the list is Prabhupada's list, it's not actually in the verse. Prabhupada added that to this translation. Oh. But Sanat Kumara is usually considered the elder and the senior. Sometimes he doesn't come first in the list, though.
Oh, okay.
They're all great sages, even though he's usually the first, sometimes one of the others gets mentioned first. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Yes, Amshuman, King Amshuman is speaking in the mood of humble Vaishnava.
Yes.
But the fact remains, he knows about that. There is some fact that he does not know, or is telling only the sages.
Yeah, he's just speaking humbly. That's the point. Is that doesn't mean he doesn't really know. He's just saying he doesn't know. Okay. All right. Let's try the last paragraph. Tasmat lukai prakasha guna katwain asammate piravau yatanyair upalabhyamana tat guna katwam astieva. Thus, even though the sun declines to provide its qualities of illumination for the owls, because they don't get up in the day, they only get up at night, so they miss the sun. Sun has nothing against the owls, but they're just sleeping all day. Yatan yair upalabhyamana tat guna katvam astyeva. Still, these qualities it possesses can be perceived by others. So the owls can say, there is no sun. That's because they never get up during the day. Tatar vag drishtibhir asambhavyamanam api twayi tat tat guna katvam twad bhakta vidvat pratyaksha siddham astyeva bhavaha eva eti bhavaha. Similarly, even though you are inconceivable to those who have inferior vision, that you actually possess all these qualities is proven by the direct perception of your wise devotees. Tata cha shrutihi. This is confirmed by such statements of shruti as these, the following. Of shruti. As these. There's a statement that says, this is a verse from 700. From the Katha Upanishad. Param chikani vatrinat swayam bhus tasmat parak pasyati nam taratman kaschid dhirat patyakatmanam aikshad avritta chakshur amitatvam ichchan. Self-born Brahma gave us senses that look outward. Notice your eyes are facing outward. You can't turn them around. Your other senses also are stuck on the outside. Self-born Brahma gave us senses that look outward. And so one sees outwardly, not within oneself. But a rare person of sober intelligence may see the inner self. Having drawn his vision inward, because he desires the nectar of immortality. Another statement of Shruti from the Mundaka Upanishad. No, I'm sorry. First of all, there's a statement from the Matara Shruti, which we know because it's cited by Madhvacharya in his Vedanta Sutra commentary. The Matara Shruti says, Bhaktir evainam nayati Bhaktir evainam darshayati Bhakti vashat purusho Bhaktir eva bhuyasi. Prabhupada quotes this in his Bhagavad Gita also. Where? And Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says, Bhakti alone brings one to him. Bhakti alone shows him. The Supreme Lord subordinates himself to Bhakti. Indeed, Bhakti is supreme. And a statement from the Mundaka Upanishad. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo namedaya nabuhuna shrutena yam evaisha vinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma revinute tanum swam ityadyacha. That says, the self cannot be obtained by discourses, nor by brain power, nor by hearing many scriptures. He can be obtained by the person whom he chooses. To that person, he reveals his personal form. Amshuman Sri Kapila Devam, Vivritau, Brahma Bhagavantau. The verses under discussion, Bhagavatam 9.8, 21-23, were spoken by Amshuman to Sri Kapiladev. With this, we have completed our explanation of Brahman and Bhagavan. And thus is the end of the Bhagavad Sandarbha, which includes the Brahma Sandarbha, is included inside. Commentary. The personality of Godhead is independent of all other powers, except for that of pure devotional service. He declines to reveal himself to uncooperative souls and only orders the lifting of the curtain of delusion for one with him with whom he is pleased. Pure bhakti, however, can impel him to change his mind about a particular soul. When anyone renders pure devotion to the Supreme Lord or just serves others who have pure devotion, the Lord feels obliged to give himself away in exchange. This unique capacity of bhakti will be explained fully in the remaining sandarbhas, especially the last two, the bhakti sandarbha and the priti sandarbha. There are two more sandarbhas before the last two, three more sandarbhas rather. Paramatma sandarbha and Krishna sandarbha. We'll explain more the sambandha tattva. The absolute truth and our theoretical understanding of our relationship with him. But so far we've discussed in this book what Bhagavan is. But the absolute truth is not only Bhagavan, he's also Paramatma. He's also the controller of his energies. That has been left for the third sandarbha. The controller of his material and spiritual and marginal energies. Then, Krishna will be discussed in the fourth sandarbha. That Krishna is actually the supreme Bhagavan, and what's special about him is in the fourth sandarbha. That finishes the discussion of sambandha tattva. After that, we have to study what should we do about it. It's concluded at the end of this sandarbha that he can be understood. We get the idea that we should want to understand him from all we've read in the sandarbha. And it's finally concluded that he can only be realized, understood by bhakti. So the process of bhakti will be described in the last two sandarbhas. Okay, let me just read the last paragraph and then we'll discuss. Iti kali yuga pavana sobhajana vibhajana prayojana avatara Shri Shri Bhagavat Krishna Chaitanya Deva Charananu Chara Vishva Vaishnava Rajasabha Sabhajana Bhajana Shri Rupa Sanatan Anushasana Bharati Garbe Shat Sandarbha Namake Shri Shri Bhagavat Sandarbha Shri Shri Bhagavat Sandarbha Nama Dvitiya Sandarbha. The personality of Godhead Shri Krishna Chaitanya Dev, the savior of Kali Yuga, descended to this world for the sake of freely distributing worship of himself. And his followers, the entire world, assembly of Vaishnavas, revere Sri Rupa Goswami and Sri Sanatan Goswami. From the womb of the divine eloquence of the teachings of Sri Rupa and Sanatan, this work, Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha, has taken birth. Thus ends its second book, entitled Bhagavat Sandarbha. Commentary. This Bhagavat Sandarbha has laid the foundation for the discussions to follow by systematically defining the concept of Bhagavan. The absolute truth is most concisely defined in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras as Janmadyasa Yataha, the source of the birth and so on of the world we know. Only the absolute truth fits this definition. But this adequately distinguishing definition hardly tells everything important about the Supreme. Brahman is in essence a person, Bhagavan, whom we can learn to understand as much as we require by accepting the guidance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Jiva Goswami, a perfect knower of the Bhagavatam, has in this sandarbha outlined a complete basic understanding of Bhagavan. Basing his presentation on numerous statements of the Bhagavatam, he has compared the ideas of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, and has gone on to discuss the special nature of the energies of Bhagavan and the eternal and transcendental nature of his personal qualities, his personal forms, his place of residence, and his devotees. Finally, Sri Jiva has concluded that this personality of Godhead is the Akhanda Tattva, or complete truth, from which everything else comes and on which everything else depends. Okay, any comments? Nityanandaprabhu, and then Jai Radhakrishna. Is that in the translation or commentary? Yeah. Well, I guess I'm being a little sarcastic. That means different people have different uses of knowledge of God. Some people have no use for it. If you want to know God, you can. If you have some purpose for it. As much as you require means as much as you want. This is talking figuratively.
This particular text is there for every Sandarbha's end like this?
You mean that last 101.5?
It seems like in Tattva Sandarbha also it ends.
Yeah, no. This is a standard tag at the end.
Okay, same.
And I'm not even sure that it's Jiva Goswami wrote it. Maybe someone else added it. But it's at the end of every Sandarbha.
Here he mentioned about Rupa Sanatana.
Yes.
But what about Gopal Bhatta Goswami? Any reason is there like that?
Jiva Goswami was particularly the Shiksha disciples of Rupa and Sanatana. He lived with them. Why do you want to include Gopal Bhatta Goswami?
I mean, before the Sandarbha starts,
he gives
credit to that.
Yes. Well, he's saying Anushasana Bharati. Yeah, okay. But, yeah, Gopal Bhatta is responsible for the first outline form of this book. But Jiva Goswami is giving Rupa Sanatan credit for his spiritual education. They trained him up. So he's going back to that.
Okay.
That it was born in the education, spiritual education that I got from Rupa Sanatan. Mm. That's the origin. Okay. Yes. Jai Radhakrishna.
Prabhu, I'm just asking questions related to your morning class also. With this morning you were mentioning that the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas, 1,000 years back or so, they saw the condition of the Kali Yuga and the people cannot follow bhakti. They gave the prapatti.
Yes.
More than bhakti. And here we are seeing that bhakti is showing bhakti.
No. They didn't replace bhakti. They replace the process of bhakti yoga, the particular discipline, the particular method of bhakti. They didn't. Bhakti is the natural activity of the soul. Nobody's rejecting that. But there are various methods of achieving pure devotion. So the old-fashioned method doesn't work very well anymore. It's too hard for people nowadays. That's what they're putting aside, all the complications of ritualistic bhakti. And they're replacing it with a very simple process of, just take shelter of the Lord. Maybe you can explain that, yes.
But in our context of bhakti, we, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, what we call as bhakti is same as prabhati, isn't it true? I mean, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Sharanagati.
We use bhakti in a few senses. We use bhakti in the sense of devotion in practice and devotion, perfected devotion, are both called bhakti. So we have two different basic meanings of bhakti anyway in our sampradaya.
So prapatti is included in bhakti, what we practice?
Yeah. We're practicing a streamlined, up-to-date version of bhakti yoga. Prabhupada likes to call it bhakti yoga. Some of the Vaishnavacharyas make a distinction that bhakti yoga is the old-fashioned style. That's just a difference in the way of use of the words. Our bhakti yoga is updated, modern bhakti yoga, not exactly what Narada describes in the Narada Pancharatra.
And the question in this is, there was a mention about that an Upanishad statement where it says that God chooses the person to whom he gives the ultimate knowledge,
yes,
and so on. But
yes,
in Gita, Krishna says that Bhaktiya Mam Abhijanati. So by doing Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti, the person is assured of understanding God.
Where do you get Bhakti? Where can you get Bhakti? How can you go and get it? Can you buy it in the store?
From the devotees.
Bhakti is independent. Bhakti gives herself to the person she chooses. And she's just a representative of the Supreme Lord. So really, you can't go out and get Bhakti. Only if Bhakti comes to you and gives her your grace, are you blessed. So again, it's Krishna's choice, as exercised by his agent, Bhakti Devi. Nobody can just decide, I'm going to go out and get Bhakti. It doesn't work like that.
So if Krishna chooses only a particular few, then how we can establish that he is impartial in all respects?
No, there's no statement here of who he chooses and who he doesn't. It doesn't say here he might choose everybody. It doesn't say that. It doesn't deny that. It doesn't say he only chooses 115,000 people and everybody else is going to hell. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ready to choose everybody. Krishna is ready to choose everybody. He gave restriction, idam na te tapaskaya na bhaktaya. Don't speak this Gita to someone who has no sense of austerity and no devotion. But any living being can be rectified and become a decent person and become fit to understand the Bhagavad Gita. The adhikar for Bhagavad Gita is the whole human race. There's no discrimination, no restriction.
Suppose if Krishna chooses everyone, then there is no necessity of the Prakriti being carried on eternally with living entities all the time.
Well, everybody isn't automatically chosen. Everyone's potentially chosen, but you don't get the benefit of that until you reciprocate, until you make a short attempt of surrendering. That's the value of prapati. The Lord's ready to give his mercy, but you have to be ready to take it. You have to shushu shokshadadanasya. When you become shushushu, willing to hear and eager to serve, and shradadana, trusting what you hear, then you get the Lord's mercy. Anybody can. There's no reason why any human being can't become shushushu and shradadana. But that prerequisite is required.
Like in the Sri Vaishnavas, they have this concept of prapati, that also their concept of antima smriti varjanam. There's no need to think of the Lord at the time of death, and
don't have to think of the Lord at the time of death.
Yeah,
Prabhupada also says that if you can't remember Krishna, he'll come and get, you know, he'll force himself into your conscience.
Yeah. And there is a common understanding that every one of them, they tell that as if it's for granted that they are going back to Godhead, those who are got initiation, and those are sincere.
On the strength of initiation?
On the strength, as well as on the strength that Lord is merciful and we are trying our best and we can't do beyond certain level. So it is a fact that because I have taken prapati.
They're confident that they won't have to take another life to continue, that they'll be finished one life.
Everybody who stays there, who says that before I go to the back to God, you know, Paramapadam they call.
Well,
if somebody dies, they put a paper.
Well, okay, but maybe we're not.
There is some devotees in South India also. They came to ISKCON and they say that in Gaudiya Sampradaya, you have to work hard and you are not sure you'll think about the Lord at time of death. But in Sri Sampradaya, everybody is going back to God.
Mama Janmani Janmani Shri. We don't care if we're really Krishna conscious. We're not so fussy about going back to Godhead. We want to serve Krishna in life after life. That's even better. That's even a better consciousness. One thing is to be sure I'm going back to Godhead. Another thing is not even care if you go back to Godhead. That's even better. I just want Krishna's, I want to be engaged in Krishna's service in the association of pure devotees, even if I take birth again and again.
That concept is there also. It is the sense of perfection, whether we here or going back.
Yeah.
But the point of perfection is achieved because of the process of prabhati. And we try our best, not intentionally we are not doing any sinful activities, but we try our best, and the very fact we tried our best is enough qualification that we will go back to God. That is perfection.
What we heard from Prabhupada was that if you have any material desire, then you have to come back again. So, that's our Siddhanta. So, we may not, we still have material desires and we die, we may have to take birth again.
So, there was discussion that we always say Mahaprabhu is the most merciful and most accessible process.
Right. Well, the thing
is it a wrong understanding of the Sri Vaishnavas and their...
Well, we have to do a scientific test. How many of them are actually going back to Godhead in the same life? They think they're going, or are they actually going? And okay, great, let them all go back to Godhead. Yeah.
There are many anecdotes they quote that one lady was always giving curd to the mutt. One lady was supplying curd to the mutt of Ramanujacharya.
Yes.
And in return, she asked a letter from his servant that gave me a chit saying that I am eligible to come back to Godhead. So she takes a chit and shows to Lord Balaji, and she goes home back to Godhead.
Okay.
So they quote many instances like this, the simplicity of the process, like that. So we don't see.
Well, we don't.
So
we
there was a threat to ISKCON devotees that in South that your process is too difficult, you are not guaranteed, and like that. How we can answer?
Well. We have a more strict view of what it takes to go back to Godhead. It's not like Krishna, we'll just wait for Krishna's mercy. We have to do something. We have to purify ourselves and be free of all selfish desires. And we can't expect to be fit to go back to Godhead until we do that. You can say that's a more miserly viewpoint, but that's how we're taught to think.
But
our emphasis is not primarily on just going back to Godhead. That's liberation. We consider the goal of achieving actual love for Krishna more important than that liberation.
Yeah, I mean, either back to Godhead or perfect.
And we understand that attaining love of Godhead doesn't happen just accidentally or haphazardly. It happens when we actually prepare ourselves for it. In most cases. We do have to work. We do have a sadhana. And that sadhana is primarily aimed at attaining prema, not at attaining mukti or Vaikuntha pravesha.
According to the description of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and this definition of Bhakti, like Anartha Nivritti Ruchi, it seems like it is not at all possible in one lifetime, and we don't see any...
Why not?
We don't see any living devotees.
No, he's not putting any time limits how long it takes to go through each of those phases. He's not saying you can't finish it all, go through all those phases in one lifetime, or even in a few years, or a few months. He doesn't say that. He doesn't put a time limit on it.
In a practical contemporary level.
Well, just in the context of what we know, our own experience, and the experience of our guard brothers, it seems like it's taken us forever.
Yeah.
But Rupa Goswami doesn't say it has to be like that. That it has to take you 80 years to get through an Arjuna Nivritti. He doesn't say that.
My question is, it takes that gradual step of all those levels, or it just, we stay with another
We have to go through those phases. You can achieve them by sadhana, or you can achieve them by Krishna's mercy.
Yeah.
Even someone who doesn't do the sadhana can get special mercy.
Yeah.
But he does have to be brought through those phases. Like if you want to leave the universe, well, if you want to go somewhere, you usually have to pass through the intermediate regions. To go from here to Mayapur, we're going to have to travel through, you know, through Uttar Pradesh, Bihar, and Bengal. Even if you fly, you still have to do that. We don't have any way of avoiding going through the material world to get to Mayapur. We don't know of any way. So like that, to achieve prema, you have to pass through these phases. Whether you do it on a slow train or an airplane or a rocket ship, you do have to do it. You have to go through the phases.
So it could be at the moment of death, you just get it directly also?
Then it's like, it's in a fraction of a second, Krishna could bring you through all the phases, but still you go through them. It may be so quick that you don't see it, but there is a sequence.
Theoretically, it seems like a lifetime to achieve, because we are...
It can be, theoretically, it can be 1,000 lifetimes or 1,000,000 lifetimes, theoretically. But we have some hope of rising above the restrictions of what seems to be ordinarily possible by the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. We have some special hope. And we have Prabhupada's promise, Prabhupada's special offer. As an agent of Krishna, Prabhupada has offered us, you just follow this program for one whole lifetime and you'll go back to Godhead, just one lifetime. So we have a special deal. We can do it in one lifetime. So we end up in the same position as Sri Vaishnavas, but with the condition that we have to follow the sadhana. We can't break the regular principles or not chant our rounds and expect that Krishna is going to drag us back to Godhead. He might, but it's not likely. We have to chant 16 rounds, follow 4 regular principles for the rest of our lives, and not reject Prabhupada and ISKCON. You know.
Or is it easy to attain Vaikuntha but difficult to get Krishna prema? That's the reason we have more stricter principles than...
That we are more... Yes, Raja Bhakti is harder to achieve than Vaikuntha Bhakti. I would be satisfied if I can even get Vaikuntha Bhakti, if I can get anything. But if you're really aiming for Raja Bhakti, then that's even harder. You have to be more surrendered, more selfless. Even if it's possible on a transcendental level to be more surrendered, but it is. There are different distinctions.
Well, actually, from outside it appears as if the Sri Vaishnavas, they have a quicker process or an easier process or something. But when we listen to what their leaders are saying, they are actually having a big problem with this term prapati in their community.
Yes.
We know that they have the two initiations like what we have. The first initiation they call as Samashrayanam and the second is Bharanyasam.
Yes.
So second initiation after, that's like a formality kind of a prapatti. Like, I have done prapatti, they say. That what they mean is I have taken the second initiation. So what is happening currently and also over the long time is that the main big problem for their leaders is people take it as a ritual of doing the Bharanyasam. Of like complete surrender to the Guru and attaining prapatti, and then they become loose in their sadhana and they don't do much saying that anyway I've attained prapatti. So many people they fall off and many get material ambitions and they go and settle in US and they earn a lot. So that's the current problem that they themselves are facing, people say that I've done prapatti but still they're not doing anything near to devotion at all.
Well, we have something of that kind of problem too. Devotees going off and getting bogged down. It happens even we have the same problem.
I don't think we can, from our point of view, I mean from externally, we don't know what is happening inside their circle, so we think that their process may be like more quicker or faster.
Right.
Ideally, I mean, it's we in our process also we include the Sharanagati as a part of bhakti. And it's supposed to, like our process is supposed to contain everything as, in fact, more than what they offer.
Yes. Sharanagati is not just a aspect of devotion. It actually is the essence. You know, to become Krishna's perfect devotee, you have to go through this phase of Sharanagati. It's not an option. Pick Sharanagati or something else. We all have to go through Sharanagati to become actual surrendered devotees. It was a certain stage of development. It's not a certain kind of option of devotional service. It's a certain stage that everybody has to go through. So therefore, it's equivalent. Their idea of prapatti and our idea of sharanagati are basically the same thing. What's actually happening, that's according to the individual devotees, how they're actually surrendering. The acharyas offer this, and then the followers may follow it or may not follow it. What can we do?
They also recognize that prapatti or sharanagati is an internal transformation, and it's not like nobody can recognize from the external appearances or from outside. Nobody can say that this person is a prapannan like that. It is more of an internal.
But Guru Goswami is giving six signs that you can see in the outside. Signs of prapatti that you can actually discern. Anyway, let's stop now. Okay, we finished this sandarbha. On Monday, we're going to start the new class. We're going to have a translation workshop. I haven't exactly decided the text yet. I'm working on it. I'll discuss on Monday. I'll explain how the class will proceed. That leaves us Friday and Saturday. So what I'm going to do, if you don't mind, is give a kind of test on the Bhagavad Sandarbha on Sunday. Don't worry, it won't be agonizing. And you can take tomorrow to prepare yourself for the test. Okay. It'll be a multiple choice or matching questions. It won't be complicated. You can pick the answer from choices. You don't have to write all the essay. Yes.
We were attended to classes because we joined the team.
Anyway, you can take the test. Take that.
Have a suggestion before doing the test? Maybe we can do something like a review of all sandarbha. Like,
yeah, but I'm not ready for that. I have to do that tomorrow, and I'm not prepared to sit down and give a whole review. Sorry, I can't remember what the whole book was. Everything that was in the book. So why don't you just sit down yourselves or in groups and discuss what was in the book. You got your notes and your recollections. Yes. I mean, it would take me a week to prepare a proper summary.
Problem is that it's a huge sandarbha, and it was so many things discussed, like,
yes,
like so many, and I don't know.
Yeah, and if you don't pass the test, you won't go back to Godhead.
Not for the test, just to know in comprehensive way after 1 week also.
Anyway, I should give a test at least once in a year, and I'd like to see, what everybody understood. That's all.
Yes.
Is it mandatory? Yeah, you should come and take the test. No excuses. Unless you have a statement from a doctor that you have swine flu or something. Yes. Okay, so we'll stop for now. Thank you. Om Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya. Sri Jiva Goswami Ki Jaya.